Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about possibilities. Now, usually we like to think about what's really in front of us and what we can do and like that, but sometimes, in fact always, we have to consider all of the possibilities, especially the possibilities that it could occur from our actions. We have to think about all of them. Sometimes there's unintended consequences, yes. People are talking about the law of unintended consequences. And yes, that's true. But let's try to think it through. And we're going to talk about reaching out to others in the community for them to tell us what the possibilities are, too. So as we often do, yes, I see we have lots of folk. Thank you all for being here and for your participation. So let's ask our seminal question, our basic question first, and then we'll decide what we're going to talk about, where we take ourselves, right? Right, because this is an unscripted show. It goes where we need to go. So what possibilities do we need to see as leaders? What do we need to look for? What do we need to be wary of? What do we need to think, if we do this, what will happen? And if we do that, what will the outcome be? Right? Yeah. So what possibilities do we see? I'm going to say this. A lot of people are talking about something that hasn't been done before, but now we're going to do it. So just because it hasn't been done doesn't mean it can't be done. Yeah, that's going to be our first possibility. It's never been done before, but it doesn't necessarily mean it can't be done. Let's think it through. I think the second one that lots of people are talking about is the possibility that that group of participants we've got, kind of all kinds of folk from all different areas and all different ideas, and maybe they've even already been together for a while and it hasn't worked out. There's the possibility, in fact, never mind the possibility, we're going to do it, that they're going to become a team. And you're going to have to convince them of that, and we're going to have to go forward with them. Yeah, that the participants can be a team. A lot of folks talking about preconceived notions that we have to think about the possibilities and what we can do to make sure that those preconceived notions can be overcome. I did not say ended, right? It's not real. I mean, it would be nice, but it's not really our focus to really change people's ingrained minds, right? But they're going to have to work together as a team here and now. So we're going to overcome that obstacle, whatever the obstacle is that's leading us apart, right? Yeah. Yes, we might have to reach outside our comfort zone. People are talking about that. Let's make it our next topic. We might need to possibly reach outside our comfort zone, right? Yes, comfort zone is kind of an Americanism, and this is, of course, a global show, but it means what we've always done. I feel comfortable doing this. I feel comfortable maybe with these people, with this group. I don't want to deal with anybody else. I feel comfortable because it's always been done that way. Ever hear anybody say that expression? Oh, this is the way it's always been done. Well, gee, let's think about it. New world. So you might have to leave your comfort zone because how it's always been done is comfortable. And everybody understands it and accepts it and nods their head and goes, yeah, That's definitely how it's always been done. Yes, we might even have to reach outside of our group, right? Outside of our comfort zone, but even outside of our group. We might have to make a relationship with maybe even people that disagree with us on a fairly basic level, but we want the same outcome, right? Yeah. So we might have to reach outside of our group. Yes, and this goes to, I think, reaching outside of the group. Quite a few people are using the term for the greater good, right? You could need to have the possibility of making alliances, of reaching out, because you've got the greater good in mind. Even if it's not so terribly beneficial to your group or to maybe your leadership, well, there's the greater good. We really want something to get done. So let's reach across and do it, right? Yeah. This is interesting too. People are talking about the media and public input, right? That we need to have maybe some backing, some rising up of the citizenry, right? Public input. I'm going to put, and people are talking about group input also, right? I'm going to call it, this is interesting. A lot of people are talking about having a mentor to explore the possibilities. Wouldn't that be nice? Yeah. Let's talk about that too, to find a mentor to help you to explore the possibilities that are available so that we can determine what we need to do. Yeah, let's have a mentor. Okay, so let's start. Let's start with the fact that it's never been done before. Oh, good point. That's not necessarily never been tried before, right? It's never been done before successfully. Yeah, because sometimes things have had a issues have been tried, people have tried to work them out, and it didn't work. Good point. Never been done before successfully. So what should we do about that? How can we figure out the possibilities? Yes, of course. Ethan and others are talking about the fact that circumstances may have changed. A lot of times that happens. Life progresses, circumstances change. Other things get done that leads to whatever your issues are to being in the forefront again. And maybe public attitude has changed. It does, you know. Cultural attitudes change, social attitudes change. Maybe, yes, new political administration, good point. Elizabeth and us are talking about new social tolerances, right? A lot of folk are talking about new technology. Yes, that circumstance is changing, right? It means that we can now do something that was just impossible before. But now, with new technology, new medical breakthrough or something like that, it's possible. I mean, when I started practice, I was a child when I started practice, just saying, but I've been in practice for 35 years. There were no computers. There was no internet. If you wanted to find something out, you pretty much went to the library. You asked around. You made some phone calls. I mean, it was not like today where you can just reach out and say hi or look at somebody's research paper or find out what's going on in the world and who's doing things that are very similar to you, right? Yeah. So new technology has made never been done before maybe not true. Because now we can. Now we can find stuff out. Now we can reach across. Yes. I honestly think, because people are talking about never been done before successfully, but it's been tried, right? I think sometimes, not our failure, of course. Well, it's ours too if it happens. But sometimes something that was not successful, you notice I tried not to use failure as a word, something that was not successful is very instructive. Yeah, because it's kind of like, well, that seemed to be a good path, because they weren't idiots. That seemed to be a good path. It seemed to be reasonable. It seemed to be the thing to do. And obviously it wasn't. Why was that? Let's analyze it. Let's find out how come. Yeah? And then we will know that maybe we should take a different tact, that maybe we should do it differently, right? Yeah. How come it didn't work is a really good question. Looks like it should have. Well, how come it didn't? Yeah. So let's really consider that and then go forward. How come it didn't work? Also, we might even connect with the people from the prior try because they're probably still interested in the change. It's just that for some reason they didn't quite make it. Maybe circumstances have changed now, but they're still interested in helping. And it's interesting to hear what happened. It's interesting to hear their take on it, right? Yeah. Why didn't it work? Why wasn't it successful? That's interesting. It's an interesting way of looking at it, right? Yeah. Yeah. So prior experiences with us, our own, we might be able to change because we know something. And we've done kind of halfway there, right? Even though it's never fully been done before. But prior experiences of others who have gone before us and may still be willing to help. They could be called in as experts, right? To really look at the situation and say, you know, from an outsider's perspective, when we tried it like this before, let's tweak it. Yeah, let's change it a little bit. Let's make it more, well, this way or that. So there's always possibility, even though it's never been done. Right? Yeah. Let's think about it. Let's think about it from a new direction. Let's think about it under these circumstances. Right? Yeah. Yes, and political climates change, social climates change. People asking for an example. A real good example in the United States is marijuana. Now, I know a lot of you are actually not in the States, but you might even have read that we have a different kind of administration at the moment, a political administration, very, very conservative. And the person who's in charge of enforcement of federal law is very, very much against marijuana legalization. The states legalized, but the federal law, not all the states, but some, the federal law has not. It's still extremely illegal to do anything with marijuana, sell it, grow it, buy it, any of those things, right? Right. Federal law trumps state law, right? Yes, because our system is set up like that. And so the attorney general, she said very slowly, is making speeches and stuff about how he's going to do federal enforcement and close down the states that have ratified to legalize it within their state, which was kind of an out-of-the-box possibility thinking thought right then and there, because nobody had ever put, it's never been done before, but doesn't mean it can't be done, right? Our first topic. No groups, no states had ever put anything on their ballot that was federally illegal and gotten it passed. I mean, but they'd never done it before at all. So that was really thinking of a possibility outside the box because it was impossible to get the federal government to change their mind. The guy who's the head of the federal government enforcement is making speeches and puffing his chest and going, we're going to enforce, we're going to crack down. The people, the states like that, said no. We're going to protest that that's a really bad idea. And he's kind of backing down because it's political climate and social climate, right? Yes. Yes, good point too. People are saying also economic climate. Very, very true. Marijuana, when it's legalized, has a tremendous amount of taxes on it, has a whole cotillion of new employees enforcing, how it's grown, that you're legal, that it's really what the quality control, and like that, a lot of jobs. did I mention the huge amount of tax? The legal, state legal marijuana industry brings in billions, with a B, of extra income to the states that have legalized marijuana. Even more to the states that have medical and recreational legalized marijuana. Hot diggity dog. Yeah, now we're getting somewhere. They don't want to have that shut down, right? Yeah, so it has revitalized the old federal fight to make it legal. They weren't fighting anymore. It was hopeless, really hopeless. And so they tried to go on state by state, which was weird, but an interesting possibility, right? Now the political and social climate has changed. Poll surveys are being taken of the United States citizens, because we do live in a kind of a democracy. And surveys are being taken, polls are being taken, as to whether or not Americans think that legalizing marijuana is a really good idea. And the answer is a resounding yes, especially for medical marijuana and also for recreational. Just resounding. A huge positive percentage. I can't remember what it is, but it's kind of like, ooh, look at that. Remember we all vote also? Ha. Yeah, so you've got political and social climate has changed. Because 25 years ago, you wouldn't have gotten that vote. People wouldn't have been as positive about it. But now, a lot of, I don't know how to say this better, but a lot of law-abiding citizens, right, have used some sort of a marijuana product for health benefits. I must confess that I had a wisdom teeth pulled. This is just a personal little story. I had wisdom teeth pulled, and you know, you swell, it's very painful and like that. In fact, I had two teeth pulled, but in any event, it was kind of a mess. And I used a topical marijuana product for the pain, and I didn't have to take the oxycodone, the truly evil painkillers that I had been prescribed. I never filled the prescription. Because I want you to know, between that and some ibuprofen, I think I'm okay. And I really don't want to have to take something that's going to wipe me out, and I might find out that I liked. You know what I mean? It was fabulous. It was like, wow, this stuff is just fabulous, and it's made me not need an opiate. Cool. Yeah. So in any event, so the social and political climate has changed. Right? Yeah, great example. Thank you for asking. Let's go on to the next one. The possibility, in fact, the certainty, right, that our participants can become a team. You're looking at these group of people. Oh, my God. They are truly not anywhere together, right, in their outlook, their opinions, and like that. My specialty is to come into groups that have already not been successful. Notice I did not use the word failed, but they have not been successful, and I'm the new sheriff in town. Yeah, not only are they kind of feeling grouchy, but they're fairly certain that they're never going to make it because they didn't make it before. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So how are we going to make a bad situation a possibility and a truth, an actual, we've done it? Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, first of all, we're going to have transparency. As Mohammed says, you should tell them right up front what's going to happen, that you're the new leader, and like that, we're going to have transparency. And we're going to announce the civility rules, right? Right. Because that's what they lack. They lack civility towards one another, or they would be a team. Mm-hmm. The civility rules are very basic for Recipe for Peace now. We like to say that the only real rule we have is the civility rules, and that means you will not be rude to one another. You will not be rude to one another. Mm-hmm. Everybody's going to have their turn to speak. everybody's going to be able to not have someone interrupt in some rude way, not be bullied, not be any of these things. If you see something that you know violates the civility rules, and you know it when you see it, it's not civil, right? It's rude. You announce the civility rules, as Muhammad says, right away, because that's transparency. I do it for every group. I do it even if the group looks like they're not going to need it, because you never know. And sometimes people lose their civility accidentally. And you can't bring in a rule after something's happened. You need the rule first. Mm-hmm. Which is why you need to enforce the civility rules immediately, consistently, as in every single time, and fairly, because you don't want to be taking sides. Immediately, consistently, and fairly. Very, very important. Yes. Because you can't enforce them once things have gone uncivil. You've already kind of lost it, and you're not making a good team that way. Pardon me, took a sip of water. The other thing about the civility rules that you must do as leader, and people are already talking about leadership style, but this is to all leadership styles. You must be a model of the civility rules. You cannot enforce something that you are not doing, right? You can't lose your temper. You can't do a whole bunch of stuff. You can't be rude. You can't be sarcastic. I recommend against humor also, because humor is in the ear of the listener, right? And sometimes people don't understand that something is humorous. I shy away from humor. I really do. And I've got kind of a sarcastic sense of humor, but not in a group, not when you're the leader. Not unless you're positive that everyone will understand what you mean. That might be okay, but you better be positive. And sometimes it's a little hard to know. Mm-hmm. Yes. So you must model the civility rules, right? Because how else are you going to get them to become a team if they're not civil to each other, right? Mm-hmm. People are talking about leadership style and making the participants into a team not only a possibility but a fact. Some cultures, and I'm including corporate culture in that statement, some cultures have different ways of approaching life, of different ways of what they expect, and you need to modify your style to be effective with them. Now, what does that mean? It means that sometimes some groups, some cultures, really want the leader to ultimately, after we've had all the discussion and like that, ultimately tell them what to do. They want to be led to something. They don't want to kind of reach it as a group consensus. They really want to be told what to do. I can do this. It's not my preferred style, but I've done it. But I don't tell what to do until we have fully discussed it. Does that make sense? It's kind of a hybrid between this is what we're going to do now and let's discuss it, come to a conclusion, and then we'll decide what we're going to do. You see, that's kind of a big difference. Mm-hmm. So it depends on the group. It depends on what they need. It depends on whether you're there to make a recommendation, right, or to really show them how it's done. If you cannot handle the group because it does not suit your leadership style, you should really admit this to yourself and to the person who brought you in and get help or recuse yourself. Because failure, I know, failure kind of isn't an option. This is true. But if you can see that you're not getting anywhere, think about what you need to do to really make it a successful outcome, right? I had a group just recently, and I am really quite experienced, as we all know. we weren't finishing. Does that make sense? We weren't really getting to the outcome and moving forward. We were like a perpetual group. And we were kind of kept rehashing the same arguments, the same, we weren't getting any further. We were just stuck. And so I actually had to call in someone the group, everyone in the group respected, to get them to understand that we're done. Let's move on. Let's take what we've learned, take what we know, take what we've decided, and move on into the real world and implement it. Yeah. And we can meet again. This is kind of so silly, but sometimes people really like to be in the group. They really like the team. They're having kind of a good time. It gives them something to do on a Tuesday night. You know what I mean? And they, hey, we've got food. We've got a potluck. It's a party. And they hate to see it end. But you need to go on, implement our recommendations, implement our outcome, and then come on back for the next set of issues. Yeah, we're not trying to throw you out. It's just that let's move forward with this, and then let's find out what else we need to do, because there's always something else good that can be done in the world. Yeah, so you can have perpetual teams. It's good. Mm-hmm. Our next topic is preconceived notions that need to be overcome, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, this is really true. Hussein says there's a difference between learned and experienced preconceived notions. Absolutely true. Yes, the learned ones have been taught to our participants and, quite frankly, sometimes to us, so we have to be careful that we understand that that's what we're dealing with and look at it really, really square and fairly. They've been taught to us by somebody we really, really respect, someone in our family, someone in our outside of this group, our social group, our ethnic group, our tribe, so to speak. Yeah, somebody told us that this was a truth, and we accepted it as truth. And we have known it for a very long time about other kinds of people, for example. Right? That is learned behavior, a learned preconceived notion. And it is sometimes even subconscious. It's such an ingrained truth, right? You really think it's truth. And then there is experiences that give us preconceived notions. Probably not with these specific human beings, although sometimes, if it's corporate, but we all want to be able to work together and be calm about the preconceived notion. Does that make sense? Yeah, we need to understand that we have it. Mm-hmm. And that's experienced preconceived notions. This is what happened before, so I expect this to happen again. Not necessarily. Let's look at the situation, right? Mm-hmm. Lee and others are saying that he says work together. People need to work together at this time on these issues, and then get done. Work together at this time on these issues, and then get done. Yeah, you know, I tell this to people, to my participants. And I don't know why, but this is always a revelation to them. The faster we reach a successful outcome that can be implemented all the way around, something really practical and good, the faster we get to that stage, the faster we don't have to see each other anymore. These meetings stop. Yay, team. This is always a revelation to people. I go, oh. If we work really hard and really well together, we get this all fleshed out, and we get to our successful outcome and it can be implemented, I don't have to sit here with these people anymore. Woo-hoo! It's a way to get things done. Remember, we're not trying to force them to be friends. We're forcing them to work together on these issues at this time. Mm-hmm. This is true, too. Once we've actually working together and we've made a team and we've managed to batten down the preconceived notions enough so that we can work together, right? And we've got this idea that although we still don't like, oh, fill in the blank, this person in front of us on our team, from that, whatever it is, culture, organization, whatever, but the person that we've got here in this room, well, he or she is unusual, right? Yeah, because we can't get rid of our preconceived notions. But they're okay. We can work together, yeah, because I still have my bias, but we're gonna work together with these people so that we can get something accomplished. That's all we want. And it is true, as Elizabeth, as others are saying, that after we're all done and implemented and like that, because I like theory as well as anybody, but I do like to see things done. I like to make sure that we're really going forward. After that happens, when we go forward and we're really done, we've had a successful outcome, it's being implemented properly and like that, you have created future working relationships, right? Yeah, you really have. You've created future working relationships. They go, well, I think I can deal with this person in this way now. Mm-hmm. And I remember that we could deal with each other before. Yeah, I think we're going to be okay. I think that we can do it again, right? That's all we want. That's all anybody wants. I think let's work together again because we can deal with each other. Don't have to be friends. Don't have to go out to dinner. But we work together well and we problem solve well. Hey, that's more than you can ask of a lot of people. That's a good working relationship. Nothing wrong with that, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is thought too. Okay, Muhammad and others are saying that once that happens, then you as an individual, and the other person is an individual too, can become good examples to others with the same bias. Look, we can work together, right? We're good examples of, well, community, for example, of peaceful cohabitation. Nothing wrong with that. Let's talk about going outside our comfort zone. Yeah, what we always have known is our comfort zone. We might need to go outside it to look for our possibilities, to look for what can be done, right? Yeah, let's go outside of our comfort zone. Because we all know kind of what our comfort zone is. It's something we're familiar with. Pardon me. But let's go outside. Let's really think about it. Let's decide what it is that we need to do. Mm-hmm. Let's decide what we need to do in order to, well, make something work. Let's decide what we need to do in order to have a working relationship with others in that group, right? It's kind of like getting a recommendation, right? Oh, yeah, I can deal with her. Mm-hmm. Outside of her comfort zone, yes, this is a scary sentence, but Greg and others are saying you get to learn new things. Yes, let's learn new things. A lot of times I'm outside of my comfort zone with technology. I haven't kept up with it. I have, but everything changes so quickly, and I'm not in the technology field. Mm-hmm. And so I like to learn new things. Now, I'm open to it, so I suppose that's not really outside of my comfort zone because I love to learn. But it's like artificial intelligence, all that AI stuff. So interesting. And really completely outside of my comfort zone of knowledge, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I like to try it. I like to look at it. I like to go, when am I going to have a household servant who's an AI and will bring me tea? Oh, no, never mind. And they go, well, soon. And how soon? Well, you know, they said that some of that stuff would not be in existence for like 100 years. It's coming kind of fast and furious, which is fabulous. I didn't even realize. People tell me stuff and I go, yeah? that's now, that's being experimented on with humans, especially in the medical field. And they go, oh, yeah, there's nanobots and stuff. And I'm like, ooh. Oh, people are saying that's not really outside my comfort zone because I'm interested. But, yeah, sometimes you do need to go outside your comfort zone. You know, this is a good point, too, and I do see people doing this, and so do you. Mm-hmm. Tim and others are saying you need to deal with reality and not just your own ideas. Deal with reality and not just your own ideas. Yes, be sure that you're not the person who refuses to accept some sort of a new reality or doesn't want to do anything about it, just goes, no, that's not how the world works. That's not how it's always been done. Mm-hmm. No. We're going to see what can be done now. This is a very good point, too, that Padma and others are making, that you, if somebody's going to help you, they might want to remain anonymous. And you must respect that, or you'll never get anybody to help you again. You must respect people's need to be anonymous, to not say who it is that's helping us, to not put their name out there. Why? The reason being, usually, that whatever is being done is very forward-thinking, and the person who doesn't want their name to be put forward is usually, excuse me, a member of a different group, a member of somebody of importance, sometimes political leaders, sometimes religious leaders, corporate people, and like that. They don't want to jeopardize what their present, but they think the future should be better, so they'll help. But they don't want anybody to know that you got the help from them, which is reasonable. They need salaries and have lives and kids and stuff. I mean, they don't want to come forward, but they will tell you something that you need to know. A lot of times that's absolutely the most useful of all. A lot of times what they will tell you is who you need to talk to and give you the information on who really has the power to effectuate change, right, for example. And that's extremely important to know. So it's fabulous, and you must keep their confidence because they've told it to you in confidence, right? Yeah. So you have to have honor. Let's talk about dealing with outside groups and alliances for the greater good. Remember, the greater good isn't necessarily against you. It's just not particularly for you. It's for everybody. And there's nothing wrong with that, because sometimes we do need to make an alliance for the greater good. Yeah, and it's important. Yeah, I'm going to say this is true. People are talking about having empathy for the difficulty of doing this, of crossing tribal barriers, so to speak, the difficulty of really reaching out to groups that, well, aren't really something you would ordinarily reach out to, right? But it's for the greater good, and that there's real, and they're reaching, they're, you may be making the first move, but they've moved back. They've come forward too. So everybody's feeling kind of, whew, this is interesting, right? But we need to get something done. Pardon me, took a little sip of water there. My voice seems to be going. So let's reach out. Let's have some empathy, right? Remember that empathy is not agreement. Empathy is understanding. Empathy is not agreement necessarily. Empathy is understanding. I understand why you have that viewpoint. I understand what you're telling me, right? And I understand why. How are we going to get this understanding back and forth so that they think the same thing about us? That we really understand each other, therefore we can work together and we can pool, P-O-O-L, our resources, and make greater numbers. I am a believer in the idea that there is power in numbers. There's power in economic benefit. Hey, I know it's all for the social good and like that, but there's power in the economic benefit, like the marijuana. We're talking billions of dollars with a B of tax money, right? and lots of jobs and all kinds of goodies. And I'm a big believer in the power of numbers all the way around. So if we could get empathy for each other and understand our differences better, we could work together better, and we could make a more solid front, right? We could not get divided out, and we could really get somewhere. So let's find out how to get empathy for our new acquaintances that we've reached out to and they've reached back, which is always a good sign. So an outside group, right? And for the greater good, maybe, or maybe just for all our good. There's nothing wrong with that. How do you get empathy? Thank you. The 5W questions, right? Yes. Let's ask them. The 5W questions are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, and why. And we think about asking them amongst our participants so that we understand where they're coming from, so we understand, also so we understand how far away we are from consensus. That's interesting to understand, too, in all truth and honesty. And the 5W questions will lead us to know that, to understand it. And that's a very important concept to really listen, to really decide, look, we're different. We've got different viewpoints. Let's see how far away we really are from each other. You'd be surprised. Sometimes the answer is not very. This is a good idea, too. Lou says to bring the group into the discussion. Yeah. Let's all have a, not just meet with the leaders, but let's everybody have a discussion. Let's see where we have common ground. Let's see how we can go forward together, right? This is true. People are talking about the invisible participants. We talk about that a lot on Recipe for Peace Now because they're important. You've got your participants, well, they may not literally be in the room, but they're the ones who are named, the ones who are on Skype, the ones who are there. So you've got your participants, but you've also got a bunch of invisible participants because they're the people that your physical participants are kind of reporting back to. Not necessarily so formally on a piece of paper and like that, not like CIA reports, but they're people that the participant respects the opinion of, and they are pronouncing opinions on what we're doing because the participant is discussing it with them. Those are invisible participants, right? That's when we break out the 5W questions kind of frequently, not necessarily all at the same time. We can pick and choose. But it is important to know about these people and how they're influencing the participants that you see. And it's important to see if we can invite them in. Right? Yeah. Come to one of our meetings. You're more than welcome to do so. Yeah, see for yourself. Let's all have a discussion together, right? Yeah. So invisible participants exist. You must understand that they're there. And let's try to make them visible. So that we don't hear what they have to say through the interpretation of our participant. Let's hear it outright. Let's hear it up front. Let's listen. This is true, too. Sometimes when you're reaching out to an outside group and you want to make an alliance for the greater good, right? And it seems really reasonable to you to do such a thing. But the other leader, because everybody's got a leader, right? The other leader feels threatened because they're worried that they're going to take second seat or be pushed out. And that would be bad, right? Yeah. And so nobody wants that. And we need to really, really understand that everyone's going to be fine. And it's not a power play on our part to grab another organization and to boot the prior leader. No, because they won't work with us. We need to bring everyone in and make sure that everyone understands that yeah, there's 2 liters, 4 liters, whatever it is, and we're all very competent, and we all have our sections, our areas that we work on, right? Yeah, and we have those people that belong in those areas. Cool. Let's go on to the next one because we are going to run out of time. I hope I get to one recipe. I know you guys like it. And that's public input. Yeah, what does the public think? And do they need to think on what we're doing? Does it impact them? Mm-hmm. If it does, then we better get some public sway, some good press, some use of social media to show that, oh, that's really, you know, good. That's really a good idea. Yeah, I'd vote for that. Yes, I think that's an excellent use of public funds, for example. Yeah, let's go forward. So public input is oftentimes very important. Exceedingly important, of course, if something's going to be on a ballot, like the marijuana. But not as important sometimes, but always important. And remember that your public might be your corporation. It doesn't have to be big time. It doesn't have to be, oh, well, the great public, the citizenry of our states. No, it can be internal to your organization, but they would be good to keep in the loop, for example, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's public also. Mm-hmm. People talking about taking a survey to find out what people think. I think so. I've seen surveys internal corporate, which we probably think are not real private, right? So don't say anything really, you know. That's to tell to the leader to bring the news further up the line, right? Right. Yes, I think it's a good idea to really survey and to get a target group and like that. It has to be worded properly. You need an expert to do it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. People are talking about engaging a media spokesperson. Yes, you do need a spokesperson because you can't talk about what you're doing. All kinds of voices, everybody's saying something and giving their opinion and like that. We're still in the process, people. It is like Benjamin Franklin said, anyone who loves the law and sausage should not see either one made. Yeah. So we need to really be able to get someone who will be the person for the media to ask, even social media and like that. And our person might indeed be doing a blog, but it's kind of a sanctioned one. Yeah. It gives a unified front to the public. Then they understand what you're doing is what it's really for. Mm-hmm. I do have indeed a rule against reporting to blogs and things like that during the process. We're still in the process. It's not done. It's not done by a mile. Nothing to see here yet, folks, right? Yeah, no, we don't need to be reported about because it will not enhance our reputation as leader. And it distracts. And it's deceptive, then the public gets all excited about something. And you go, geez, that's not so far away from what we thought it was. It's not even funny. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about engaging a mentor. Usually a mentor is someone older who is giving back to the community by mentoring, right? They're usually retired people. Maybe not. Okay. This would be somebody in your firm. Hallelujah. Which would be even more useful. Mm-hmm. It is, okay, we should mentor too. It makes a circle. If you want to get a great mentor, you have to be a great mentor. Mm-hmm. And you have to be the person that's desirable to choose and choose carefully for who you mentor. Because the benefit has to go in both directions. benefit has to go in both directions. It is imperative that you get to meet at convenient times, you get to really get honest opinions and like that. And for that, you must be open. And to get, even if it is something is said which you really didn't want to hear, well, sit down and think about it. Is this something that I need to really analyze? Is this something that I need mentor, that I need help? Do I need to ask somebody's advice? Right? Yeah. I suppose this is true, too. Yeah. Nathan and others are saying that it's also psychological support, that you know that you've got someone with your back that's really interested in you, and it's a psychological boon that you're going to be okay, that you've got somebody to lean on. Yes. And also, if you have a mentor, they can help you deal with your reactions to things, right? Yes. Usually people get a mentor when they're kind of new in the field. But I don't know why you folks should not be able to get one if somebody's willing to kind of let you shadow. Yes. Yes, people do indeed get kind of involved and kind of frisky. I know that, yeah. So mentoring is a two-way street. Our last one is group input. Uh-oh, we're getting kind of close to not doing the recipe. I'm going to give it a try. Group input. The thing about your group is you need to get buy-in. You need to get people to really feel enthusiastic and to actually implement the successful outcome when we leave the group, right? And so they need to have had some input so that they really, really feel like they were part of it, right? Yeah. Yes, what we're going for, Suki and others are saying what you're going for is you need a practical, workable solution for future interpretation and implementation too, right? You need a practical, workable solution for future implementation and to really be a good example to others. Yes. She goes on to say you need to be able to work together and present to your own groups. Very good point. Remember we talked about invisible participants just now? Well, they're being kind of, when the success, when the outcome is decided and like that, they have to have buy-in to do it because that's why their group and a person at the table. So everybody needs to go, yeah, we've really looked at all the angles. We've looked at all the possibilities. This is the best option. We're going to reserve some flexibility, right, in case when we really get into it, things change or circumstances change or there's a better possibility, right? Hey, you always have to be open to that. Just because we have said it does not mean that it can't be changed as we go to work it through. And that's really the key to it. To really be able to work it through and say, hey, this is what we need to do now, right? Yeah. And in order to do that, it's best if we kind of respect each other as human beings. Yes, why not? We're fabulous. Let's respect each other as human beings and be able to really work together. And one of the ways to do that is to really get to know each other on a more convivial basis and not just during arguments, so to speak, right? Yes. And that's why we have the food in the room, because it makes for a better experience. People look forward to being a member of the group, right? It's an honor, and it's not odious. It's kind of a party, yeah? Mm-hmm. And we get to talk to each other about stuff that is not going to be something that makes us mad. Mm-hmm. And so we're going to have some food in the room, going to have ourselves a treat. Mm-hmm. And the food is really a tool. It is not, I mean, it could be hungry, it could be dinner. But the food is a tool to get us to really deal with each other. Mm-hmm. And if we're going to have food, which we are, we're going to need to take a survey amongst our participants and find out if there's prohibitions. If somebody's allergic to something, doesn't eat something, has a religious prohibition, whatever. We're going to find out what you can't eat. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to ask people when they bring the food to bring a list of what is in it so that we can know if we can eat it. I think that we should also have a safe recipe. We've taken the survey. Everybody can eat it for sure. And it has ingredients that my people would have seen before, would have done before, would have really found that they're sure that they can eat this. It's not an adventure as in, what do you think that is, right? Now, my people would think a curry is kind of an adventure, but this is a global show. Maybe curry would be very, very common where you are, but you have to decide it. So let's do the adventure recipe. It's not very adventurous, but the somewhat adventurous recipe, because we have not so much time, and the one with the soup with the dumplings on top is a little bit more involved. It's kind of like, oh, let's choose this one. It's faster. So it's oven barbecued chicken. Now, if you've got a barbecue and you're going to all barbecue and be outdoors and like that, that'd be fabulous. And you could certainly put this on a barbecue. But basically speaking, being a city dweller and usually having the meeting somewhere downtown, we usually don't have a barbecue. So this can be prepared in advance and kept warm and like that. Of course, you don't want it to get crummy, but yeah. Okay, let's make about 6 pounds of chicken pieces. I really like to make all breasts because everybody likes it, and it's a little less messy because it doesn't have a bunch of bones. So I'm going to go for breast halves that have been skinned. I like the boneless, skinless ones. Easier to eat. But you can decide. They come like that in this town. So we're going to go about 6 pounds, maybe a little bit more. Let's have a nice big onion, a nice sweet onion that we're going to chop up. A couple cloves of minced garlic, right? I use a lot of garlic. You can use less. A tablespoon of cooking oil. The barbecue chicken sauce, which is what makes this kind of adventurous. I'm going to actually use 3/4 of a cup of chili sauce, 2 tablespoons of honey, 2 tablespoons of soy sauce, and 1 tablespoon of yellow mustard. The Dijon might be okay, too. I kind of like it. Yellow's a little sweeter. And I'm going to use a half teaspoon of prepared horseradish. You see, it's kind of sweet and spicy at the same time without being too overdone. Yeah. If you think the chili sauce is too much, I have made it with ketchup in my day, which makes it less spicy. We're going to preheat our oven to 375. Mm-hmm. Because we're going to bake the chicken for a while before we put anything on it. We're going to take the chicken, we're going to bake it uncovered on just a baking dish, a baking pan, for about a half hour so that it's really cooked through. Mm-hmm. But still kind of pinkish because we're going to cook it some more. Mm-hmm. We're going to take our sauce ingredients, right? And we're going to take the little oil and we're going to cook the onion and the garlic until they're nice and tender, right? Yummy. Smells nice. Then we're going to stir in the chili sauce, ketchup if you'd prefer, the honey, the soy sauce, the mustard, and the horseradish. Stir, stir, stir. Ooh, nice and thick. Delicious. Mm-hmm. You know, our chicken that's been in the oven, let's take it out and let's flip it. And we're going to brush it with the sauce. And we're going to bake it again, all covered in the sauce, until it's no longer pink, right? We don't like pink chicken. That's another half hour, in my opinion. They're usually pretty nice breasts, and it's like half an hour. We have some sauce left over because we coated the chicken real nice. There's a little bit of sauce left over. You can give it a warm-up, and you can put it on the chicken as you come out, you know, turn it around. I like it to have lots of sauce, and I usually serve it with buns, and I put the chicken breast. Well, actually, I usually cut the chicken breasts in half now that they're cooked and everything. And I put them on kind of medium-sized soft buns. And then I put a little bit of extra barbecue sauce when I'm putting it on the bun. So this nice and slathered in the sauce and yummy. It also makes it less messy if you make little sandwiches out of it, right? And it portions it better. And yeah, and you've got lots of nice little sandwiches, and they've all got the lovely sauce, and then people can just hold a napkin under their little sandwich and not make barbecue mess. So that's, you know, how I feel about a mess. That, my friends, is the adventure recipe. Why is it adventure? Kind of the chili sauce and the horseradish and things like that. My friends, we are out of time. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for coming. Prior shows, yes, thank you. Prior shows, they're archived on that website. There's lots of them. We've been doing this for some years. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.